Alien Harding Ultrasound System is proudly sponsored by Innovate, the UK's best loved trail running company. And this August, it's August, everybody, 2024, we are giving away another pair of their incredible Trail Fly trail running shoes. These are the shoes that I wore for the Spine Challenger South back in June. And also, more recently, I wore them at the Lakeland 100. I didn't take the shoes off at all for either race except to change my socks. I didn't swap shoes out. Both races were 108 miles long with a load of vert. Took me over 30 hours. How many blisters did I get? None. How many injuries did I get? None. Because these are the greatest shoes ever made. They're perfect for training runs and longer races on hard ground and slippy, slidey mud. The graphene grip gives a hard-wearing traction on tough trails, stops you skidding on rocks and falling over and all that sort of stuff. And it's they're available in two fits, standard and wide. I cannot go on about these shoes enough. If you have a look at race photos, look at the lead women and men running, and you'll see that the majority of them are wearing these shoes. If you want to win a pair, then head to our Instagram page. The link to the competition is up in the link tree. Enter your details and away you go. Just to remind you, this podcast does contain some sweary language, maybe some adult themes, and possibly some very immature stuff as well. So maybe don't play in the car on the school run. We love you. On with the pod. The Legends episode you're about to hear was recorded a year ago. Yes, a year ago in 2023, August 2023. It's been sat in our archives and we are pulling it out now because I think it's an important conversation that I have with Alan. The themes running through this might upset some listeners. There's themes of addiction, self-harm, depression, abuse. So it might be a good idea just to curb your little ear holes if you think that might upset you. But yeah, we will catch up with Alan again soon. But I really wanted to put this out because I think it's an important conversation with a great, great man. So enjoy and understand a lot has happened since this conversation was recorded. And we will catch up with Alan soon. But let us know what you think on the Instagram page. On with the pod. Hello and welcome to the Bailey and Harding Ultrasound System Legends episodes. So every now and again, we put these episodes out interviewing someone that either myself or Anna deems to be a legend. Not necessarily people that you might have heard of, but people who we think represent the sport of ultra running in a legendary way. And this week, I have the pleasure of being joined by my friend, all-round legend and super ultra runner, Alan Bateson. Yay!
Hello.
Alan, are you out of your comfort zone?
A little bit.
He's a little bit out of his comfort zone, listeners. So you're going to have to get him a little bit warmed up, I'm afraid. So I wanted to talk to Alan because me and Alan have lots of things in common, lots of fun things in common. We like ultra running. We like doing events. We also used to like drinking ourselves into oblivion and doing other fun stuff. So, Alan, do you want to? I'm not going to introduce you. Do you want to give yourself a little intro? Give us some good points about who you are.
Okay. Bullet points who I am. Mm. So, I'm now, at this point in time, a 44-year-old ultra runner with quite a good few years behind me. If you rewind 10 years ago, I was a 34-year-old, fully fledged cocaine snorting alcoholic that was not running. But was doing quite a lot of weight training and convincing myself that by doing that in the gym, I was looking after myself because I was strong.
That work? How does that work? Like the cocaine in the gym?
So what you generally do is...
I don't feel like they go together very well.
You drink litres of rum, you snort loads of cocaine, and then you wake up, have really strong coffee, force yourself into the gym through the day, then work all day, punishing yourself until 4:30 till you can get home. You haven't eaten all day because you're full of self-loathing about the amount of calories you've had the night before. And then you get in at 4:30, slay the first bottle of wine, have a spliff, and then carry on drinking and tell yourself you're not going to do it again tomorrow. But guess what? You do. And it just goes on this horrible cycle. And in between that, sporadically, you have periods where you manage to have a couple of weeks off, you lose a few pounds, you start running again. Luckily, I've always been able to dip in and out of running. I've always been able to do like 5 or 10 miles, whatever shape I'm in. I can always go out and run 5 or 10 miles.
Yeah.
So I just convinced myself that I was okay for little periods of time until every few months it would come to a head and it would be blatantly obvious that I wasn't okay and that life was falling down around me. My weight would balloon. My relationship was in trouble. I had young children at that point. Well, they're not old now. They're all teenagers now. But Yeah, it was a messy period.
Right, so let's in the words of the Artful Dodger. Oh, we love music on the ultrasound system, by the way. So I'm going to ask you. You better start thinking about the bangers you want to add to the playlist now, because you're going to get
Okay.
asked at the end of this playlist. Let's rewind. Like, when did the like were you always an activity person? Like, running around, having a nice time person, or did that come later in life? Like, tell us about young Alan.
Young Alan was, yeah, always been a good runner, to be honest. Won the local schools at primary school, won things at high school. My kids always come back on sports time. My kids at the high school I went to, I still hold the record there for the 800 meters. Yeah,
Wow,
1994.
what
So,
a
Alan, my kids are
dad
trying to beat
brag. Love it.
it. I'm, represented school across country for Shropshire, for the county I live in. But football was my first love, really. So I ran and played football. And then, of course, as soon as I left school at 16 and started playing football, it revolves around pubs. At amateur level, it all revolves around pubs. I mean, I think it still does to a certain extent, but in the 90s especially,
Oh man, the 90s was like, I
it was
wasn't a football
full
fan, but like, do you remember when Man United released that song called Come On You Reds?
on. Yeah.
That was a tune. That was what it was
Yeah.
about, wasn't it? It was like
Also a Tottenham
Vindaloo.
fan.
Yeah, fat, yeah, fat Les, like all that stuff. It was all pub, 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 pub.
Yeah.
So yeah, so you basically would go play football, then go down the pub.
And go down the pub and then go out. And then, of course, I got into drugs as well. I was doing a lot of speed at 16, 17. And then at 18, I got into ecstasy in a big way. And then I got arrested. I started selling pills. So I got arrested in a nightclub with some pills on me and ended up being sent to prison. Went to a Young Offenders Institute for a few months, and then after about a few months of being there, I got sent to a Warrington, which was an open prison.
Yeah.
And unbelievably now, looking back, I got a job working in the gym there, and that's when I started to learn first about weight training and all that aspect of gym work. But
Yeah.
running was natural to me, and there was a treadmill there, so I used to go in the treadmill and we'd just do little bits in there. And one of the officers came over to me, noticed I was a decent runner. And they used to take me out on their lunch break, these two officers, running around Cheshire in Warrington. Look at it, like they'd sign me out and be responsible for me. And they started teaching me about pacing. And they were, it's a, just an unbelievable thing to do. I mean, they could see I'd stopped smoking when I went to prison. I was really trying to change my life. Everything you had, your behaviour reports in an open prison at that age, you can apply then to go home towards the end of your sentence. So you go home on a Friday. You spend some time with your family, you start to reintegrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the older I get and the more obviously I learn about life, the more I think, what an amazing thing those two guys did for me.
That's mental, isn't it? Like, I guess you weren't a murderer, were you? So,
No,
like,
not
maybe
convicted anyway.
not convicted. Exactly. But that's mad. Like, oh yeah, just come out for a run at lunchtime. Sounds all right. Sounds all right.
Then, yeah, so I got out of there at 21. And when I'd gone into prison, I remember I never had scales, I never weighed myself. But I remember when you go in, you obviously have to get weighed and checked. And I was 9 stone at 19 years old. I was just so thin. I was just
That's
doing
tiny,
drugs
isn't
all
it?
the time, just, yeah, drugs all the time. And when I came out, I was 11 stone, I was fit, I was running. I went back to playing football and was, at that point, I thought drugs were my problem, not alcohol.
Yeah.
So I was adamant that I wasn't going to go back to drugs. And over the next few years, my drinking just escalated to the point where I stopped playing football, I stopped running. I was in a mess with it.
Why was that? Why do you think that was?
Because I'm an addict. Because, I mean, you and I have had this conversation before, and I know you disagree with this, but this is how I see it. Whatever I do, I seem to want to take it to the end game. Like, and people say to me, and I know you hate this, but hear me out. I have transferred my addiction from drugs, alcohol, whatever, to running. I take that a little bit. And this is subjective. Quiet now. This is subjective. Because I think I can get addicted to most things. If it's something I enjoy, I want to just throw myself into it completely.
Do you know why I argue against that?
Go on.
Are you running right now?
No.
You're not, are you? Why are you not running?
I'm injured.
Right. But that's why it's not an addiction. Because with the
Yeah,
booze,
so
it doesn't matter what fucking happens. It doesn't matter how injured you are. It doesn't matter how shit you feel. And it doesn't matter how who you're hurting or what is going on in your life, you'll get that booze. That's why I think it's different. Whereas with the running, you're like, right, I'm injured. So I'm actually making a decision to stop. And I don't have to do it. Like I can make that. And also, it's hard to do running. Like if you enjoy it, you go out and do it. But it's not easy. It doesn't come naturally. Like, you know, if it's raining, you still stop and go, fuck, it's raining. I've got to go for a run. Or I get to go for a run or whatever it is. And yeah, you love it and you put your all into it and you take it to like the ridiculous miles that you do. But it's not like being addicted to a substance. I just don't think it is.
No, when you put it like that, that's right. Maybe the better word for it for me then would be obsessive. I have
But yeah.
obsessive states with it. Obsessive, I mean, at the minute, because I've not been able to run. And there was a photo that Wayne Drinkwater took of me at the end of my FKT in the summer. And I looked at it, and my arms and my shoulders, I was so thin.
You were tight. Do you know what? I looked at that picture and I was like, that's how you do it. Because when I did Run Britannia, with so much weight, they had to send me a new bag halfway through. And I was like, probably the leanest I'd ever been. I'm not saying the fittest, but I was the leanest I'd ever been. And when I got back, I was like, I need to put on a half a stone. And now I'm in your boat of I just need to lose half a stone because I've been eating too many of those delicious
Well,
desserts and
it's more
saying,
than
oh,
half a stone for me.
you don't eat or you don't drink or smoke because you can eat what you want. That's my thing. And I'm
I'm
like, but you
enjoying it as
can't.
well. And I have been enjoying it. And I've been enjoying going to gym. And my 15-year-old comes to the gym with me. And he's a big, strong lad. And he looked around to me one day, just after I'd finished the FKT. And he said, are you still warming up, Dad? And I said, no, this is as heavy as I can lift. And he just
Oh
started laughing
my
at me.
God.
But my male ego was bruised. So I've just obsessed about that, to be honest. I've been eating loads, I've been training really hard in the gym, trying to get stronger and fitter. And I always do this when I'm injured, and then I start running and my muscles are bouncing around and my man boobs, and I regret it because it's not, strength can never be a weakness, but it can hold you back a little bit by having too much muscle mass when you want to go running the sort of distances we enjoy to do. Or even when I'm doing my speed work on my intervals, which I always do at the start of a training phase. It's harder carrying 14 and a half stone uphill than it is 13 stone.
Yeah, that's one of the conversations I have with clients. You know, it's not like a judgment about how much you weigh or what you look like. It's literally harder to carry that weight up a hill than it is not. And that's where I'm at the moment. So you got out of prison. I'm going back in time. Back in
Yeah,
time.
let's do it. I can switch around.
You got switcheroo. So you came out of prison at 21. You started drinking really, really heavily. Like all that stuff you'd done in prison, the running, the weightlift, the stuff in the gym, and then you did that. Did that transfer at all to outside of prison, or did you kind of
Yeah,
start
I
doing it and then just like
continued with that.
slide?
I continued with that, and I mean, it's never a we go from here and we end up there. It was always like a transition, isn't there? Where you're drinking and you're training, and then gradually the drinking increases, the training decreases, and before you know it, it doesn't happen overnight. But it seems like fuck. You wake up one day, you put weight on, you realise you're not running, you realise you're not playing football because you got too pissed on a Friday, and you ended up going to pub at 12 on a Saturday instead of playing at 2 o'clock. It just escalates, and all of a sudden, oh, and then I started hairdressing as well. I retrained to be a hairdresser at 23, which of course meant working a lot of weekends. So I was not playing football on a Saturday; I was playing on a Sunday, which is a lesser standard. So it's like, oh, I can go out and get twisted on a Saturday night because it's only Sunday morning. It's fine; I can still hold my own. It doesn't matter, and you can for a while. Fitness-wise, because you're young, and a lot of the men you're playing against are in their early 30s. Which seemed really old then, says the 45-year-old version of me
I
now.
know. Now it's like, now I'm like, oh, well, I'm not even middle-aged. Whereas when I was like in my 20s, I thought 40 was like ancient.
proper. So I decided to get help. At 26, I was when I just knew I couldn't sort myself out. I kept trying to have time off, and it would always just end in tears. It would always be, well, I've not drank Monday and Tuesday, so it's Wednesday and everyone's going out from the salon. So I'll go out with the girls from the salon. I'll just have a couple. And it's not a couple. The girls all go home at 9 o'clock. We're in the salon and I'm in a nightclub talking to just randoms, getting pissed. And then I was getting told off because I was stinking of booze in the salon, breathing over clients on a Thursday.
Oh my God, so this is so familiar to me. Like,
It's
oh,
just
like.
messy. And it becomes hard work. The fun starts to come out of it. So I went to get help, and I went to I got
At what
refused
point,
in
so what
the
point did
GP.
you go and get help? Like, what point did
At
you go?
26.
Yeah, but was there like a, was there a rock bottom, or was it just a?
Not really, no. I mean, I get asked that a lot. I mean, that wasn't the end of my drinking.
But I think a lot of people will be interested in this, because I get a lot of messages from people saying, I think I've got a problematic relationship with alcohol, but I'm not an alcoholic, or I'm not binge, or I'm not this, or I'm not that. And they don't want to have like a target, a thing put
If you
on them.
don't want labels, then that's
No, but
fine.
then they're, but then they're
GP
like, what, at what stage did you go? Because it's all about you, isn't it? It's about the
Yeah.
individual saying, I need to stop, or I need to change something. You can't have someone else tell you how to do it.
No.
So it was there a, mine was a horrible face on the floor, blood all over the pavement, rock bottom type scenario, which I don't ever want anyone to ever have to experience. But your first time wasn't like that. So what was it? Did you just wake up one day and go, I'm fucking, I've had enough of this?
No, there was a, that summer there was a lot of things. I mean, I got arrested that summer, I got CS gassed, I was in a fight. I woke up in a police cell, didn't know why I was there. I'd gone away with my girlfriend at the time for what was supposed to be a nice weekend, booked into like a hotel, gone out on the piss, which was always going to end in tears. Decided to go to a cocktail bar, which is never a good idea for me because I drink cocktails like I drink pints of Guinness really fast. And then we'd been in, I can't even remember what happened. We'd been in a queue for some food and someone had said something. And I just reacted, as I did quite often, violently. And then the police had been involved. And I just, yeah. I remember getting CS gassed. But when I woke up in the cell, I just couldn't quite work out what had happened. And then I had to obviously get released and work my way back to the hotel and find the girl I was with at the time. Just a mess, just a real mess. But that was. Yeah, it wasn't, I wouldn't say that was the straw that broke the camel's back, but it was wasn't a good night, put it that way. But there was a few things that summer, and my weight was ballooning, and I wasn't happy.
And when you, when you said, when you say, oh, I want to get, want to get help, did you think that that would be, that that would be it? Or did you think, oh, it's all right, I just get some help to like not drink as
Yeah,
much?
this is the problem you see with like trying to give up and admitting to yourself. This is. And people say, oh, I don't want to, I'm not, I don't want to label, I don't want to be an alcoholic. For me, finally, when I did get sober at the end of 38, which we'll come on to later, I went to a couple of AA meetings, which wasn't for me because I'm not good in groups, but I learned from it. And I'm happy and confident to say to people, I'm Alan, I'm an alcoholic. What they do with that information is up to them, I don't give a fuck. But I'm an alcoholic and that, so I can never drink again. If I drink again, it will end in tears. That's the end of that. But as a young person at 26, yeah, I thought I'd go for help and they would help me enable me to go back to drinking safely. So it's
Oh,
what they called it. It's,
if
yeah, doesn't it, it? That world doesn't exist, does it?
sadly not, not for me either. I'm an alcoholic too. Let's hold hands and run around together. Yeah, I like, I'm exactly the same. I'm like, nah. And sometimes people say, you could just have one. I'm like, you don't, you know, and I'm like, are you actually on crack? I can't. And it's cool for me to not have one. I am an alcoholic. I can't have one.
Well, I never
And
wanted one. I never saw the point in these people that have one anyway.
I am the same. I'm like, what's the point in having one when you could have eight? So yeah, that's brilliant. That's, I love it though. That thought of, I'll go and get myself sorted out so then I can just drink like a normal
Yeah, they'll
person.
fix me. These people will fix
Perfect. Perfect. Who did you go to fix you then?
me. A company that don't exist anymore. There was a company called Impact Alcohol Services, which is a charity in Shrewsbury, which is a town about 25 miles away from me. And I had there what I would call probably the most important adult relationship in my life outside of romantic relationships. A guy called Paul, I won't talk about him much because, you know, it's a long time ago and he probably wouldn't want me to talk about him. But this guy, over
You can give
2 years
him a fake name if
afterwards.
you want. You can call him like Thor or something.
Yeah, not Thor. There's only one
Thor.
Paul.
Okay. Thorina. He'd like that.
So yeah, I spoke to this guy for 2 years. At first, it was we every week, and then eventually it went down to fortnightly and blah blah blah, monthly. And at the end, he just said, "Look, I think we're done here." So it was, and within 3 or 4 months of stopping seeing him, I was drinking again. We played in a cup final. I
Oh
got fit,
shit.
scored in a cup final. Felt good. Went back to the pub with the lads, and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to drink spirits. I'm just going to drink Guinness. because that was I liked to drink Guinness. So I think I had 5 or 6 pints of Guinness. Of course, the cup was being handed round full of spirit, so I had a couple of slurps of that. But I woke up on the Sunday, on the Monday, it was a Sunday game, feeling like I'd been hit by a train on 7 pints of Guinness.
Yeah, because it's,
Generally, when I'm drinking heavily,
yeah.
I just drink that at lunchtime and then carry on my day.
Me too, man. I was like an 8 pint a person. I could have 8 pints of beer, then I could actually start drinking. It was mental.
Crazy what your body adapts to, which is the same with miles, isn't it?
Yeah.
People say, how do you run 100 miles? Well, how did I drink 3 bottles of wine and then get up and go to the gym at 6? The same thing. Your body
Yeah.
adapts to whatever
And then
you.
you, like, I've just come in from a 6 mile run. I've had 4 days off. And like 4 miles into that run, I was like, how the hell did I run 64 miles last week? It's the same thing. Brilliant. Anyway, so the four, it was 4 months later. Why do you think that your I'm going to say your addiction counselor person, why did they, do you think they said it, that's it? But why do you think they ended that
Well,
relationship?
obviously, because there's more than me in the world, isn't there? There's plenty of people that wanted that spot. I'd been
Yeah.
going there for over 2 years. What was I going to do? You know, it was a charity. I couldn't just keep going in constantly and using him as my crutch for keeping me sober. At some point, I'd stand on my own 2 feet.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, you and I both know this from coaching. People like accountability.
Yeah.
You know full well that sometimes if you've got a client that you're coaching and they're doing really well, if they stop coaching and you check the Strava 2 months later, there might not be a lot happening.
No.
And it was the same, and that's how I would look at it. He was basically like coaching me to be sober, except
You
he
didn't
wasn't.
have anyone outside of him, like it wasn't like there was like a group or anything,
No,
like, no.
I've tried that. It's just, my dad always takes the piss out of me. Even like Cub Scouts, I went to Cub Scouts when I was younger, and I went twice. It's like, no, I don't like it. There's other kids there. I don't like being part of a group. I just always feel really, I've never been part of a running club.
You know
Never done
what?
it.
It's that's really interesting because I've had this experiences where I've gone to groups, AA and other recovery groups, and I've just not liked it. I've just not liked it. Like I have no problem saying to people, I'm an alcoholic and this is my experience. We all fucking know that. It's all over the internet. Like I've written a fucking book. But like I don't do the group thing. I don't know what it is. I really don't know what it is.
Kind as well, quite. I'm trying to be diplomatic. Quite sad about it was you go in there and it might be, I'm Alan. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober for 2 months. Blah blah blah. Whatever. And you'd be like, hi, my name is Derek. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober for 18 years. And like for 18 years, you've been going to that same room and you've been telling that same story about how remorseful you are, something you did. So I fucking let it go. You know, forgive yourself. You fucked up. We all make horrible mistakes, but you can't keep coming in this room every Thursday night and telling everyone what a dick you were 18 years ago.
I think that I would get quite bored of that quite quickly.
Yeah, it's like you just, what have you done in that 18 years that's now positive? How have you changed your life around in that 18 years? Tell me something good about yourself. Let's not keep rehashing old messed up stories because to remind ourselves that we shouldn't drink because we can be total dicks.
Yeah, I mean,
That's
I've never
never
actually.
passed my mind anyway. I don't need to
No,
remind
I've
myself.
never thought of it like that. But you know, we're not saying. Listen, we're not saying it's bad to go to AA at all. Like some people find it extremely helpful, and they go all the time, and that's really great. But what gets me is that a lot of people say you have to go to AA, or you have to get a sponsor, or you have to do this, or you have to do that. And a lot of the books I've read have said if you don't have that support network of other alcoholics or other addicts, you will fail. And I haven't had that. Alan hasn't had that. And neither of us has failed to date. So I think it's not it that scares people. I think if they think that they're not that, you know, that's not how they work and they won't be able to do that. There are ways of doing it. And like, you know, me and you chat to each other on WhatsApp and but you know, I was sober before I met you. And I've got other people that I chat to, but not I don't go to meetings and I don't feel the need to do that for myself. But maybe Derek, who's been sober 18 years and goes to those meetings every week and says exactly the same thing every week, is helping someone else.
Yeah,
So
maybe
we'll give
if
Derek
Derek didn't
his
come,
dues.
maybe he wouldn't make 19 years. Maybe that hits his crutch and that's
Yeah.
cool. I mean, everyone's got to do what's right for them.
Yeah.
But no, they can't shove it down your throat and say, oh, well, you won't get sober if you don't go to meetings
No.
or vice versa. You've got to find your own way.
Yeah,
And that way is
100%.
going to look different for most of us. But I'm a massive believer in having a focus. Like we touched on before with me, I'm unable to run at the minute while I sort this knee out. So my focus is I want to get bigger and stronger and enjoy the gym. And try and get more flexible and try and build up the strength around my legs. And when I'm running again and not lifting, my focus will be right. Initially, I'm not going to go back to running 50 mile weeks. I'm not going to be able to. So it'll be my weekly total made up of an interval session, a recovery run, an easy run, and then maybe a long hour, hour and 15 minutes at the weekend. And that'll take some discipline because of the way my brain is wired and my ego. Let's be honest, we've all got an ego to run businesses we do. It'll be like, oh, you're fine, you can go and do 90 minutes, 2 hours this Saturday. But I've got to think long term. Like, I've got the Arc in January, then I've got 100 miler in Cheshire in May. I've got 300 milers in the first 8 months next year that, unless I handle this comeback correctly, they just won't happen.
No.
So
We're
I did
going
go
back
on
in time
holiday.
again. You're a right time hopper. Do you know that? We're going to talk about you running in a minute. But first off, let's just go back to this. Like, right, you're back on it. You're back on the booze, right? But you came off it again when you were 36. Is that
I
right?
haven't finished that little story.
No, you haven't. So
So
go
when
on,
I was
finish it.
in those 2 years, when I decided to get sober, I was smoking fags and drinking. So I moved back to my hometown, Bishop's Castle, finished the relationship I was in, living on my own, decided it would be a good idea to start smoking weed to help me get sober. So obviously that went from smoking a couple of spliffs to smoking 4 or 5 spliffs every day and going to meetings and being, not meetings, like meetings with Paul, the counsellor.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing him every week, but I'm smoking weed daily. And
Does
then,
Paul know you're smoking weed?
yeah, I was dead honest with him. I told him everything. And
Right.
I also told him that cocaine started creeping to the picture a little bit as well. But to my mind, I'm not drinking, so it's okay. This is the lesser of evils because,
I'm like this, but with Bon Maman puddings.
well, I
So
think.
I'm like, I'm not drinking or smoking, so I can eat as many Bon Maman puddings as possible. And now I've got a
I
big
think they're
problem.
probably better than booze, coke, or weed, to be
They're
honest.
definitely better than Coke, but they're more expensive than Coke.
Fuck, are
Yeah, really expensive. Anyway, continue. So you're on Coke and you're smoking weed, but you're not drinking, so that's a good thing.
not drinking. And my thinking on that was, so quite often I'll go around some friends' houses at weekends, we'd have a smoke a few spliffs, do a few lines. I drop them off at the pub and I just go home and then just be like sat in my house on my own, getting stoned, maybe sorting some lines, just a really unhealthy relationship with life. But I was losing weight, I was lean again, I was playing football, I was running. I was 26, 27. You can do what you want to your body within reason, can't you?
Yeah.
I was eating clean, I had like a spare room with all my gym stuff in, I was lifting weights, and I got myself in decent shape. And then I just started drinking again, and it just escalated really quick.
Why did you start drinking again? Because of the football.
Because of the football, and because I thought, and I just started a new relationship at that time, and I convinced myself that I was going to be okay because I'd be accountable, and that's bullshit. You can't, when you're an alcoholic, you are accountable to nothing except the bottle.
No.
You convince yourself that you're going to do it for him or for her or for these other people that mean something to you. They don't mean shit when you get drunk. No
No,
one does.
no. But that's the worst bit about it.
Yeah, it just makes you a selfish dick. And basically, it's like a Jekyll and Hyde thing. And my friends say this to me, you are like a really nice person when you're you, and then you start drinking and it's a completely different person. It can still be nice or can be a total dick. It's just, you never know what you're going to get. It's a lottery.
Yeah, I had the same thing. My friends used to talk about Other Ali. They'd be like, is Ali coming out tonight or is Other Ali coming out? And the thing is, it was always a bit of a joke. Like, Other Ali was always like, oh, Other Ali, she's crazy. And it's like, yeah, but the thing about Other Ali is she's an absolute fucking see you next Tuesday. Awful creature. Terrible. Doesn't give a fuck about anyone. And also, deeply vulnerable, deeply hurting, and deeply sad. But you don't see that bit because
Oh.
that's why I was drinking. But because I felt so fucking shit about everything, I just wanted to drown it. Like,
Yeah.
did you ever come to a conclusion as to, like, did you know why you were doing it? Or were you just like, well, that's just what I do?
Well, there's several ways of looking at that. I mean, what I did do once I spoke to Paul, I built a relationship with him, and I spoke to him about the fact that I'd been sexually abused as a 10-year-old boy, which I hadn't spoke to anyone about before. But I got to a place with him where I felt, how would I put it? I just felt I trusted him. I felt safe with him, and I felt okay to talk in that room with him.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of links. There's a guy you may have come across. My pronunciation might not be right. Gabor Mate.
Yeah.
Have you heard of him?
Yeah.
It's like,
Gabor Mate.
is that, yeah, you've got a better pronunciation of it. Childhood trauma and addiction and the link between the two. And
Really good
that's,
books. He's written really good books, hasn't he?
I mean, there's a strong possibility there's a link there. But I also think, to be totally honest with you, it's just my personality as well. Because that wouldn't explain why the fact that I was sexually abused as a child, that doesn't explain why I also will run miles, why I will eat sweets until they're coming out my ears, why I get obsessed about things, why I will get, you know, there's, I think it's an element of both. Possibly the fact that I was trying to drown out some feelings. I still get flashbacks now, and it's not a nice thing to experience. But sooner or later, you've got to accept this is what has happened to my life. It's tough shit. I can't change it. Don't play the victim. You deal with it and then try and move on, because it's always going to be there. So you're not going to drown it. It doesn't matter how much you drink or how much you snort. You're not going to go back to being 10 again. It's happened.
No, exactly. It's how you respond to a circumstance, isn't it? The circumstance doesn't define your future, it's your response to the circumstance. But I think when you're young, you don't know that. And also when you have this like personality where you're like all or nothing, literally all or nothing, that's another thing. And I think I've got a bit of that, but not as much as you have, like, because I don't get as obsessed as you do, but I totally see that. I actually looked at ultra running as another way of self-harming myself. So when I was really drinking really badly and doing 100 milers, like loads of them, like 50 ultras in a year type running, it was another way of like being an arsehole to myself. It
Yeah,
was like
I
half
completely agree.
proving I was okay, but also half flagellating myself to the point of absolute exhaustion.
Yeah,
Because
that. I
I
did that
found
this
it
summer.
easier to do ultras when I was drinking than I do now.
Because you're number, you don't feel as much.
Yeah, because you're totally numb. So it doesn't, so the pain, you don't feel the pain, the emotional or mental pain or the physical pain. And when you do feel the physical pain, you're almost like more. So you're like, you're trying to feel something. Whereas now it's like, oh, does that hurt? Oh, I've got to look after myself. Oh, have I eaten enough? It's really hard. What I'm doing here. I'm not saying drink. I'm not saying go and be an alky because it makes you run better.
Better,
Doesn't.
obviously, running. Yeah,
Doesn't.
I bet your times are better now, though. And I bet.
Am I t yeah, my times are actually better. My
Yeah.
times are better, but I'm older, so it's harder now. So it's hard, isn't it, to look at it and go, oh,
Yeah.
am I, yeah, I enjoy it more, put it that way. I enjoy my life a lot more now than I did then.
Oh, God, yeah, it's just. Well, I
10
always
pounds
try and
off.
say to people that don't understand the mentalities, like, you must have had, you know, think, oh, you had a great time all the time, so you're always pissed. No, I would get in from work. I would get my bottle of wine. I'd pour a glass down that glass. Then I'd pour the second one to take them through and go and see my kids then. And that would be, those two glasses would be the only two glasses really in the evening that I enjoy. The first one would hit within 5 or 10 minutes. You get that tingling behind the eyes, and that would be relief. The second one, by the time I'd finished it, I'd be merry. And then after that, it's like, well, fuck, I can't stop even if I want to. And I'm not talking like thimble glasses. I'm getting three glasses to a bottle. By the time I've had those first two, you know, I've got a glass left, first bottle's gone. On you go.
I was
It's
the same man,
fun,
exactly the
isn't
same with rosé. It was like the first one was relief. The second one was on a level, and by the time I'd finished the second one, which was probably 20 minutes from the first one to the end of the second one,
it?
I was like, fuck, now I'm in the hole. And now I've got to go to the pub or on my own, or now I've got to finish the bottle, or now I've got to go to the shop or go to a different shop. That was a classic. Go to a different shop to buy a bottle because I don't want the bloke in the shop to think I'm an alky, even though he blames it, he knows I'm an alky. But I would always leave half a bottle in the fridge. Always. Because then I was like, what if there's half a bottle in the fridge? I haven't got a problem. Classic.
Yeah,
What
I
an
did not do
idiot.
that.
Oh, I did. So when was the So you're back on the booze. When was the second like stopping point for you?
There was a few then. There was a few. When I was about 31, I met a guy. Well, I did his wife's hair, the one called Sharon, and her husband Tim. I got to know him. He was British style champion at the time in 2011. Really good runner. And I'd never done any events since I left school. I just used to run on my own, that solitary thing. And he encouraged me, took me out, and started again coaching me, mentoring me, for want of a better word, teaching me more about running, about how to run, how to train for specifics, and encouraged me to enter some local fell races and some local events, even first half marathon, and was
What,
just.
your first ever half marathon?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. How old were you when you did that?
I think about 2014, 2013, maybe. I don't know. How old am I now? I'm 44 now. I keep saying I'm 45. I'm not 45 yet. I'm 44.
I don't even know. I can't do maths.
33, 34, something
Oh,
like that.
okay. That's pretty late, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd never done any events. I
Yeah,
didn't like
same as
being around
me.
loads of people. It still freaks me out. Well, you were like the start of the arc rest last year. That
You
was just.
run an events company.
I
You
love that.
literally run a. Okay, so Alan has a events company called Running Monk, right? And Running Monk, what do you do? Like, oh, you do like everything
Running
from like
Monk trail events. So we just
half
do trail events,
marathons
yeah.
to 100 milers, right?
5K up to 100 miles, yeah. No cut-offs in any events. I just love people being there. Yeah, but I'm not stood in the pack, and we don't have big numbers. We've never got.
You have people, like loads of them, and a gantry. They're there. They all run away. Then they come
Yeah,
back, and you're looking after them, and you love it.
but they come back and dibs and drabs, and I cuddle them once at a time.
Oh, okay. So if they all come together as a pack, you're like, no.
And remember, I'm 6 years sober now. I'm 44. I'm in a really good place in life, and yeah, it's different now.
Okay.
But and I've kind of got to grips with, and I think a lot of that probably stems from my childhood. People being close up to me and feeling threatened, and I literally lived 20 years, if not more, of my life, like in a constant state of ready to fight, ready to lash out, just thinking someone was out to get me. Constantly wanting to go back to being that little boy that couldn't just defend himself. And then puberty happens and you get the testosterone and you feel like you want to look after yourself and you want to look after the people that you love, et cetera, et cetera. And then I was just angry at myself for not looking after myself. I was angry at what had happened to me. I was angry at all the people around me that I felt should have protected me. Blah, blah, blah. I'd never liked people close to me. Even intimacy was just difficult for a long time. So it's probably all related to that. I don't know.
Anyway, you're at your first half, you do your first half marathon, right? At the age of like, let's say 33.
Okay.
Then what hap then what happens?
I went and got pissed to celebrate. I
Oh
finished it.
God.
Actually, one of my coaching guys has just sent me this weekend. He's supposed to be on a weekend off, and he's just sent me a link to this Trail Fest half marathon up at Dani Ffestiniog. What about doing this weekend and just winging it? I was like, yeah, if you want to do it, but you're going into a tempo phase next weekend to take it easy. And then he's just sent me a picture of me on the website with no beard and no leg tattoos
Oh my
from back in the
God.
day when I did it, which I think must be, yeah, 10, 12 years ago, something like
Wow.
that. God, I look weird without a beard and without leg
I
tattoos.
wouldn't think I'd even recognize you without a beard or
Yeah,
leg tattoos,
but
dude.
he said if I didn't know it was you, I wouldn't recognize you. You hadn't told me that you'd done it before. Yeah, but it finishes at Dolgellau, where you run down the side of the train track.
Yeah.
Done that on the Welsh Coast Path.
Yeah.
Finishes on that. And I just literally, my ex-wife was there with, I think we only had two kids in them days. I ran straight in. Straight into the train station, straight into the bar, ordered 2 pints of Guinness, down one while the other one was settling, and then went back out and had the second pint. And then, yeah, went to my car, had my weed pipe in there, had a blast on my weed pipe.
Fucking hell. I don't know why I'm saying fucking hell, because I used to do this as well. I had wine on the way around ultras, wrote
Yeah.
little bottles of rosé, and I would drink it and be like, it's sports wine. It's good for you. It's like electrolytes and fucking painkiller. It's good for you.
Horrendous, really, isn't it?
Smoking cigarettes midway through ultras and at the start, the middle, the end. Like, I've only not been smoking for like 7 weeks. Like,
Yeah.
but
But that
yeah.
was it. My first ever ultra, not my first ultra, I did a few smaller ultras. My first 50 miler, I just entered one randomly, and you know what I'm like with computers, so I didn't really know. So I got my friend Sharon, who I mentioned before, to right, help me enter this event. She said, you know, it's up in the Lake District, right? Yeah, that's fine. I'll just drive up to it and drive home. So I drove up, did this 50 miler, stopped at a hotel the night before, got there in the morning. Everyone's packing their bags, like all the kits. And I've just got obviously bare minimum kit, some trainers. I was just going to run 50 miles. This guy's got like Ziploc bags and he's put his tobacco and razors in there. And
That's what I used to do.
I thought you're taking that on ultra. He said, yeah, last one. He said, I did one a few weeks ago and I forgot to put my razors in a wet bag. He said, and I got to have a fag part way around. And I was just thinking, my God, these are my fucking people. This is where I belong. I just did that and then drove home. That was a mistake. Don't do 50 miles in
Oh
the Lake
my
District. Get in
God,
your
you
car and drive.
fucking idiot.
And I stopped partway home at a service station to get some food. And I couldn't get out of the car. And there's all these lads on a stag do, all pissing up the side of the coach and whatever, all giving me shit. And then I realised I had to go up some steps past the coach to get up to the Burger King for some food.
Oh God.
It entertained them. But it's okay, you live and learn, don't you?
Yeah. But at what point were you like this? Do you remember your like descent into ultra? Was it like a, or ascent into ultra? Was it like a, you did a marathon and you were like, oh, then I'm going to do an ultra? Was it like conscious or were you just like more, 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 more?
More. So 38 was like, oh yeah, between that, like 33, 34, doing a half marathon, I fluctuated, but when I was drinking, it was getting worse. I was drinking at home a lot. I had three kids. My daughter was born in 2012. Yeah, she's 11. No, yeah, she's 11 now. So my marriage was falling apart. I had three kids. I was drinking heavily. 38, I fully got sober. Separated from my ex-wife. So we had the kids 50-50. So all of a sudden, I've got time, because drinking takes up a lot of your spare time.
Yeah, it does.
Having your kids half the week, you've got half the week to just do your work, and that's it. So I'm single, living on my own. What the fuck do you do with your time at night? You just go running, don't you? And luckily, in that last year of drinking, I think I drank about 7 months, and I've been sober about five. So I've been gradually getting fitter. So it wasn't like I just woke up one day and decided to be. I had probably had a base of 30, 40 miles a week, and then got sober, and then was just like, let's push this. So then I just was pushing it and pushing it. Was running with Tim a bit, that guy that was coached me through my early 30s, still under a bit of guidance, but was wanting to learn more myself. So I was reading loads, absorbing loads of information. And I didn't do a marathon, I just went straight into ultras. I've
Yeah.
never done a marathon, I don't think. I don't think I
Have you
ever have.
not?
No, not
There's a little
completely.
challenge for you.
Not interested, really. I've ran loads, obviously. I've done the distance in training.
Don't you organise marathons like for
Yeah.
a living? So go and run one of your own. Go and do that.
Well, I've run that one loads of times. I marked my route.
There you go then.
Although
Well done.
Katie did it all this time. Because I'm injured. We just done a marathon and a 50 mile the other week, and Katie had to do it all because I drove around with the car a bit and put a few on gateways, but
Oh, Katie,
yeah.
I'm going to set up your Zooms for you, looking
Yeah,
after an old man to mark your courses for you. So that last, the last time you got sober, the current time, the time now, the time, the
the end.
end. Why was it the end? Because I don't like it, right? When you talk to people, wait, or when you listen to podcasts, people go, then I got sober, and then I did this, and it's like, well, how? How did that happen? Because there's
Okay.
so many people that I speak to or that message me, and they're like, how do I do this?
There were some rock bottoms that year. So 2017. I mean, I'd had quite a few periods of sobriety in that year, because I knew I was just really I was sick to death of feeling shit. I was sick to death of hating myself. I was sick to death of just making mistakes, of feeling like a bad dad. Like I say, my marriage was falling apart anyway. It was just a miserable existence, and that first glass was the only nice one. It was costing me a fortune. It just wasn't fun anymore. So I went to a wedding with my ex-wife, got really drunk, offended loads of people, might have dropped the C-bomb a couple of times to a couple of her uncles, may
Brilliant.
possibly have offered a couple of people outside, really, and said something inappropriate to one of her cousins. Just and woke up and just didn't know anything about it. Just didn't remember a thing. And then my mum said to me one day that my eldest son had said to her, because I'm quite a quiet person, I don't shout, I'm quite calm most of the time, that dad had been shouting at the telly on a Sunday because football had been on and I'd been drunk in the day shouting at the telly, which is out of character, and the kids had noticed it.
Oh,
So
God.
those two things really hit me quite hard. One, that my kids were getting sick. My oldest, when I got sober, they were 5, 7, and 9. 5-year-old doesn't really remember me drinking at all. 7-year-old does a bit. 9-year-old can remember things like that, which I still have guilt issues for. So I work hard every day now for them more than for me, to try and set a good example and compensate for some of the balls ups I've made. But it wasn't just you wake up and you decide to be sober. I'd gone to AA meetings earlier in that year. Wasn't for me. I've been doing loads of reading, And I just, it was a Sunday night, and I said to my ex at the time, I've got three quarters of a bottle of white wine or something in the fridge, so I can leave wine in the fridge. I think I probably had about five bottles on a Saturday, and I'd only drank four of them because I had four and like a quarter, three quarters of a bottle on a Sunday. So I went out to the pub, had a couple of pints, and said, once that wine's gone tonight, I'm stopping tomorrow. And that was Monday, 20th of November 2017, and I just woke up and I just knew that was it. I wasn't doing it anymore. I was done with it. I was determined that I was going to be fit. I was going to set a good example to the kids, and I just knew that I could have a happier life without it.
Did you find it hard? Like, did you go
Really
through
difficult.
did you go through like the weeks of it being difficult, or were you like, no, this is how it is, and I've stopped?
No, I don't want to talk too much about my marriage, but my ex-wife was still we were still together at that point. She's still drinking every day. So we just sat in separate rooms at night. That was difficult, but that. Once we sort of fully separated and we didn't live together, it was a lot easier then because this is what I was doing. So if the kids were there, it was just, they were young and we just watched Disney films, have cuddles. If they weren't there, I was just out. I was just out. Either in the gym
Running.
or I was training. I was doing something productive in my time, or I'd just go to bed early and get up and go to like a circuits class at 5 in the morning. Run. At that point, I was still predominantly hairdressing, so I could work late in the evening. I could work till late if I wanted to. I'm self-employed, so I can do whatever I want in terms of hours. I just got through it. I was still smoking then as well, so that would take the edge off it. Still smoking a bit of weed, still smoking fags.
But you were like, that's it, I'm done.
Yeah, I just knew. But it wasn't, there'd been a lot of false dawns. But I just, when most of your life, most of your drinking life is miserable, then you just know that something's got to give, hasn't it? What are you
Yeah, but
doing?
I think it's when you get to being really honest with yourself. Because I was looking for another reason, so I blamed it on everything else other than my drinking. I was like, I'm depressed, which I was. It's the relationship, it's the job, it's where I live, it's this, it's that, it's trauma, it's PTSD, it's the past. But really, what it was the drinking. Like all that shit was happening, but the drinking was exacerbating it by like four or five times. And now I don't drink. All that stuff is still there, but I can manage it. Like, because I don't have to like run through treacle to manage it. And so, and that's why I stopped. And that's why I continue to stop. Stopping was fucking hard. And I will always say to people, it's fucking hard work, but it's so worth it. And then, and now if I think about drinking and then think about how much more difficult that stuff is to deal with when I'm
Oh,
hungover or drunk. I'm like, fuck that. It's not even worth a thought. Like, it's
no, it's
just not
not.
even worth a thought.
And the thing is, I mean, the times where you want to drink, they get fewer and farther between. I had a really close one a couple of weeks ago because I'm not running, and I've been sort of, you said about, I mean, I was on medication from the ages of 18 to just over 30, 31, I think, antidepressants, sleeping tablets, all sorts. But I mean, I'm completely sober since 38. I don't have any medication. I deal with things.
Me
I think.
neither. And I could totally see where medication comes into it, but I'm like, and I had to have it 2 years ago when I stopped. I had to go back on medication because I was suicidal. But it's like now I'm like, I want to see everything as clearly as I can and experience every single feeling, even if those feelings are an ideation feeling, because I want to be able to be conscious of my choice. And so that's how, why I do it. But I think there's nothing bad about people being on medication, nothing bad about people looking after themselves. But I'm the same as you. I'm like, I want everything in absolute, even the horror, I want in like 4D. Everything has to be 4D.
But you then have to be confident in your ability to navigate those horrible times. And I got as far a few weeks ago, I don't know, 2, 3 weeks, having a plan. It was like, right, it was 6 pints of cider. I could go to the pub, I could have 5 or 6 pints of cider. Doesn't matter how pissed I am, because I've got to come past Co-op to get home, and then I could just buy two bottles of wine and just come home, and I could just have a blowout.
Did you
And
have this plan in your head? Were you making this
yeah.
plan? Brilliant.
Yeah. And it's just like fucking scary that I was thinking that way. And I said, obviously, I talked to Katie about everything, and I said to her I was having a just having a tough time with it. I've been having a tough time lately, but you learn from that. You learn from the fact, right, so what put me in that vulnerable position? And I've learned what put me in a vulnerable position was identifying myself too much as I'm Alan, I'm a runner. So I took a big step back from Instagram. I've hardly posted. I've hardly really looked at people's running stuff. I'm just trying to concentrate on just being me, not just being the running me.
Exactly. That's
But I can't run at the
such a
minute.
good point. It's such a good point. Like pouring your entire self-worth or your entire identity into one thing is a mistake. Like into anything, be it your job, your kids, your missus, your running, your car, your whatever. Like it's about you looking after you. I think that's such an important message and like such an inspiring thing to say. It's like you've recognized it and you're like, I'm stepping away from this shit. This can fuck off. Like, no. And that's brilliant. And I just think it's a super, super important message. So at what point in this did you start Running Monk? Like, did you start the trail events company? Was that something like a long-held thing, or was that something
Yeah, I
that,
always
like,
wanted to do it,
how did it
really.
happen?
Well, for years in my 30s, when I was doing sort of women's hair, I'd put the colour on and then I'd sit down and I'd write them out little training plans or meal plans or just try and help people with their fitness.
This sounds like a great hairdresser. I wish I'd gone to this hairdresser. Yes, I would like my hair to be coloured, please, but also I would like a 100-mile training plan. Thank you so much.
obviously not getting paid for that. It's just I like to help people. And then I decided to just do more coaching, specifically running coaching, doing that. And then alongside that, because I do that every year for the last few years, that's 3 years, I've been doing a big charity run, trying to raise money for different charities that are important to me. So the first year I thought, oh God, how am I going to pay my bills while I'm away? Blah, blah, blah. But I managed. The second year I thought, I
Hang
need
on a
to.
minute. Let's just go into these charity runs because we're not talking about the Great North Run, are we? We're not talking about like the Arc of Attrition. We're talking about like big runs.
Okay, so the first year I ran Offa's Dyke, which is 177 miles.
It's 177 miles, basically winds through Wales and England. It's an absolute bastard of a path.
29,000 feet of climbing. That was good. So I did that one, but that was just a couple of 3 days. So I managed to obviously take time off work and fund that myself. Managed to raise 21 grand for a charity called Calm, Campaign Against Living Miserably.
21 grand. Good work, soldier.
It was a bonkers summer that year. I think it was because we'd all come out of lockdown. Everyone, there's quite a few, it was Campaign Against Living Miserably, which is male suicide prevention. There's a few men around here who've killed themselves, unfortunately, in the last few years. I think it just struck a chord everywhere. I'd never had social media or an email address or anything till that year. I just didn't know anything about it. My friend Laura, who babysits me really, she just said, right, because I thought you'd just get sponsor forms and hand them out at the kids' school. She's like, no,
Sponsor
no.
forms. Remember them.
No, you need to get social media. So she come round to help me create it. And then I had another friend, Sarah, that said, you need an Instagram name. And I was like, well, I've got one, Alan Bateson. And she said, no, you can't just use your own name. Anyway, so all my friends say I'm like a monk now because I've gone from always going out to I just hibernate. I live, I train, I eat, I go to bed. I'm like a monk. And running to me, it is like a religious thing. It's where I find my peace. Like some people might pray or they might go to church or whatever. For me, it's like a spiritual thing. I
That's
come back.
exactly the same for me.
Come
And I
back
know
and
that's that
feel.
sounds really hippy dippy, doesn't it? But
I don't
like
care.
it is my church. Like the hills are my church. That is where I go to be like totally me.
And become back semi-normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, one day I'm going to come
Magic.
back normal. In the meantime, it'll be semi-normal.
Yeah. Don't come back normal. Normal's boring. Just stay as you are.
So I just yeah, it was a Running Monk Shropshire, which is my Instagram, and then so that was the first year. Second year, I decided to try and run the whole Wales Coast Path, which is 870 miles, and raise money for a charity called Young Minds. Because I thought if we can help young people learn how to talk about their feelings and communicate, maybe in 15 years, 20 years, my sons won't be having 40-year-old friends hang themselves and shoot themselves. So that went badly wrong. I twisted my ankle after 580 miles, did 580 miles in 14 days, ankle popped down in Pembrokeshire. Really frustrated. So that was that. Managed to raise 5 grand for Young Minds. But that year we decided, Katie and I, just maybe just put on a 50K event for some of my coaching clients and for some local people. I just call it Running Monk Trail events. Then we started to panic, thinking, God, that's quite a big one to do for your first event. Why don't we do a local 10K first, a trail 10K? Did that, and that was really popular. People love that distance, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And then I just loved it. I just loved being at the finish line, seeing people cross, especially the longer ones. And like the 10K, we had people doing their first ever trail event, their first ever off-road event. People crying, people laughing, people giving you cuddles. It's just the best buzz. But it doesn't pay at all. Hopefully in the future it will. We both work full time and we're trying to build it up. But there's so many big companies doing it. Obviously, they've got bigger budgets and blah, blah, blah. So
Yeah,
we
but
did
do
that.
you know what? I'm like, listen, I've done one of Alan's events and it was actually really hard. It was a half marathon. I was like, that's a bit piece of piss. I haven't done a half marathon for years. Now I know why, because they're horrible and they're hard. But it was quite hard. It was muddy, it was hilly, it was brilliant. And it was at the end of like a 3 day running thing. So I was tired. I'm giving my excuses in. But the point is, people there were lovely. The organization was amazing. And it was kind of like back, like old school. It wasn't like Race to the Carphone Warehouse. It wasn't all zhuzhy and shiny. It was like just a really nice trail experience with a load of really nice people. And I've had clients who've gone and done your other races who have absolutely loved them. So I think that low key thing, one day you're going to end up with a sold out massive race and you're going to be like, shit, I don't like this.
Yeah, we've
You're
already
going to
said
wish
that.
it was
Katie and
like
I
it
have
was
already said we're going to
before.
cap it. We just wouldn't have more than 100. And I know people go bigger because they want more money or whatever. But I just think last week we did a marathon and a 50, no, 2 weeks ago, marathon and a 50 miler on the hottest day of the year and that hot Saturday we had.
Yeah. What's that the
So,
hottest day of the year? Because the South Downs Way 100 in June was fucking boiling.
well, so it said on the news.
Whatever. I
They
think my
never
race was
lie.
the
The
hottest race
BBC
of the year.
never lie, Ellie.
Do they not? Oh, okay. I'll start believing everything they say then. There's some stories that have gone quite quiet, isn't there, on the BBC? Wonder why that is. Anyway, so it was the hottest day of the year. It was at least 40 degrees.
And it was, yeah, I think we had 54, 55 runners out. One woman sprained her ankle, so I had to go and pick her up, which leaves Katie at the finish line on her own. We've got the timing going on, but if you've, I mean, that, and then we had another woman drop from the 50 mile down to the marathon because she was so hot. I just think if you go with big numbers and things go wrong, I want to be personally involved. I'm a control freak. So Katie or I wants to be the one to go out and sort it. If you've got 150 runners and you've got two different problems going on, we've got great marshals and we've got great aid station teams. Everyone, I know everyone. I can speak to everyone in the morning. I can get around and see people. I want everyone to come in and feel like part of a community, a family sort of feel. And I don't think you can get that as you get bigger.
Yeah, so I went and did a race the other week at a very popular northern ultra running company, and I felt like from the minute I got there, I was at a wedding I shouldn't have been at. Like, I felt like it was a click. Like, I felt like, fuck. Like, this, I don't feel comfortable. And I'd heard how welcoming this community was, and I didn't feel welcome. And at the briefing, the race director was like giving out, saying to people, oh, so and so's done 1,000 miles with us, so and so's done 7 billion miles with us. Here's an award for this person, making loads of in jokes. But at no point did the race director say, welcome, has anyone here, is this anyone's first event with us?
Right, okay.
Is this anyone's first? And I was like, right. So I already felt like I wasn't in the group. It just felt re really weird and I didn't like it. And then I tried talking to people the way around and nobody wanted to talk to me. Like, maybe it's me. I don't know. But I've not had that before. And it was a long race. It was a 60-mile race. And I just felt like everyone knew each other and there was no room for anybody new to come in. And I've only done one of your events, but that half marathon, I spoke to everyone. And everyone was really nice. And even like in the kitchen at the end, eating the cakes and stuff and drinking oat milk coffee, I just felt like I belonged there. So I think that's
Good.
a really great thing about Running Monk Trail events is that you really make people feel like they are welcome and wanted. It doesn't matter what level they are, who they are, where they're from. That's really important for a race company to do. So you should
That is
definitely.
really important, the fact the different levels and abilities, and it can mean, like, especially on the long events, you can be welcoming your first runner over the line, and it can be 8, 10 hours before you get your last runner over the line. You know, very often messages you on the Sunday or the Monday, the people that are at the back to say they've had the best experience and the finish line's still up. It's like, the fuck, why wouldn't the finish line still be up?
Oh, mate, how many
It's
times have I
exactly
come
the
into
same as
events and
you.
their finish line's been down and I'm not at the back? Like, I'm not at
It's
the
kind of
back.
scandalous.
It's absolutely scandalous. It's just you're not being treated like.
The same as everyone else.
Yeah, but also the other thing is, if you're at the back, you're actually showing more endurance than the person that's won. Because you've
Exactly
been
that.
out there for hours and hours and hours longer. So, you know, this comes back to the addiction thing, I think. And this comes back to this, like, this is what we talk about a lot, you know, you don't have to be perfect to start running. You don't have to be like this, like this Adonis. You don't have to be clean. You don't have to be a non-smoker. You don't have to be not on drugs. You don't have to be like, you could, anyone can start at any point and things get better. Like, because I know there was a time where I honestly thought I was never going to get well. I thought, this is it for me, for my life. I will feel like shit for the rest of my life. Even though I was running like 50, 60, 70 mile weeks and like doing loads of ultras, I didn't believe I could feel, I wouldn't use the word happy very loosely, but like content. But I do now. Like, and I think running has a lot to do with that. Running didn't save me, but it has a lot to do with that. Like, so like, is that something that you feel like with Running Monk, you want to kind of push that message to get people involved?
Definitely, because just you can see from the people that we have had come back do two or three events, or from the messages you get, you can see the progress that people make, not just in their running, but mentally. It gives them a better sense of self-esteem, that feeling of community, like you said, of recognizing themselves and other people, so they can have conversations with people about stuff they may not have with their loved ones or their work colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
It's that like-minded people, isn't it? And that doesn't have to mean, you and I talking about addiction, or two people down the road talking about their shared love of cars. If you're into that running world, that is a shared hobby, isn't it? Doesn't matter what you do outside of that running world. You come together by the fact that you two, three, four people can share a conversation about running and all that entails.
It's a leveler. It is a leveler. Being out there on those trails is a complete leveler. And you know, I've seen it on great big races like the ones I've done in Namibia, or like, you know, the great big 5 or 6 days, even Dragon's Back, something like that. People from all walks of life who have different interests, different jobs, different political views, different, all these different music tastes, whatever it is. But they come together and they share this experience. And that brings them, and that's what humans are supposed to do, right? Like, it's.
But to be part of enabling that is just, it is a wonderful feeling. That's addictive in itself. It almost makes me feel sometimes like sacking off some of my other work and really gambling on it, but you just can't do that because it's not going to pay any
But
bills.
you can't do that yet, Alan. But in 3 or 4 years, you might be able to, because it's about, with race companies, it's about word of mouth. It's about people's experiences when it comes to growth. Honestly, I think that's what it is. And if you look at the, you know, I would say look at the big boys like Centurion. They're not Threshold. Like, they are not Threshold. But they make a James makes a living out of just race directing. You know, and he does like 8 or 9 races a year, not loads. So I think keep an eye on it. But also, I'm really interested to see how your 100 miler goes.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by
When
that.
is
Cape
your
Town,
100 miler?
July the 6th next year.
Ooh.
Katie thinks I'm bonkers for saying no cut-offs.
I don't know how you're going to police the aid stations. How, like,
But the
have
aid
you act
stations.
how are your volunteers going to like survive if you've got
At
no
the aid
cars?
stations, there's no cut-off to finish the event. There will be cut-offs at the aid stations, i.e., people will be able to be there for a certain amount of time, then they'll go, and then there'll be some food and water left. But again, because we're not going to do huge numbers,
Are you
I'll be
allowed
there.
crew?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Crew, and you can have pacers from after 60 miles. But you allow crew. Yeah, of course. I mean, people say, to me, that's just a daft question. It's like, can you have crew? Or can, yeah, people can have as much help as they want. And I want people to be involved. And I want crewing someone in itself is a bloody chore, isn't it? I'd much rather run than be
Oh my
crew.
God, me too. Me too.
So,
People
yeah,
never
it's
ask me to
not.
crew.
If
They
people.
never ask me to crew. And I think it's because they know that I'd just be like, fucking hurry up and get it
Well, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. We've got quite a few entries for that are first time 100 milers, which to me, if I can be there and see them cross the finish line, what a buzz that is going to be. We've also got a few evented that are going to be faster than I want them to be.
Oh
That's the thing.
shit,
You have some
really?
crossing the line in 22, 23 hours, and then you've got some doing it in 45.
You've
It's
got to
a
get
long
out and
spread,
set
isn't
up.
it?
You've got to get out and set up those aid stations for the fast ones as well, haven't you? Because you've got to get out and do it quickly.
Yeah,
Yeah.
but I mean, what we're doing, we're gambling on that because we're hiring. Most of them are going to be indoors. I'm hiring places, and they'll just be nice venues
Yeah.
because I want people to have a good experience.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. Like, I honestly do. Like, the other week, a couple of weeks ago, I DNF'd a 100 because I couldn't deal with the fact that none of the sorry, I'm talking absolute shit. So I DNF'd this 100 because none of the aid station, it was a Brecon 100, so it was hard, you
I
know,
know
it's a
exactly
hard
what you
one.
mean.
And none of and at the halfway point where the drop bags were, it wasn't undercover. It was at Taliban Reservoir car park. So there was a tent with no sides, so like a tiny lid. It was howling a gale. It'd been raining all day. Drop bags were there, but people were in the back of someone's van getting changed. And I was like, no, I'm done. Fuck this. No. Because I just was like, I need to have a full change of kit. I'm having a shit time. I'm done. I wasn't that bothered about finishing it from the start, but having those checkpoints undercover, at least like the ones where the drop bags are, is so important. Like, it's
I think
so
so.
important.
And people, I mean, hopefully it's going to be nice weather, but if it's not, I mean, I was running around Wales this July and it was fucking freezing and pouring down most days. But
So
hopefully July will be decent weather.
let's just quickly go into that. What were you doing in July running around Wales? What was the aim of that? Was the aim of the game with that?
Yeah. So obviously we touched on earlier the fact that I did 580 miles of the coast path last year and got injured. I could not leave that one lie, so I just came home, sorted my ankle out, did loads of physio, and this year I went and did the whole Wales coast path, finishing at Chepstow, and then from Chepstow I ran up the Offa's Dyke back to Ferstatyn for what was supposed to be a total of 1,047 miles. It was actually 1,059 miles.
Quite good.
It's
Like,
quite
that's
good.
quite
It was quite good.
good.
Yeah, it was a
It
nice
wasn't
three
that
weeks
far off. It wasn't that far
out.
off. But the point is, you now hold the fastest known time for that coast bar, taking it, pulling it from under the nose of my friend Rhys Jenkins, shaking it in his face, and then running away with it. Brilliant. Love it. Love it. I love it. I love it when Rhys, well done. And you're like, thanks.
Was very gracious, Reese. He
So
was one of the first to message.
how long did that take you? How many days?
Well, Wales took me 19 days, 5 hours.
Whoa.
And then it was 22 days, 12 hours to finish. By the time I'd finished going up the Offa's Dyke.
So your mileage was exactly the same as my mileage for Run Britannia. Exactly.
1,059.
Exactly to the, on the nose, yeah. Except that it took me
Wow.
35 days because we were forced to have rest days. But that is incredible. That's something that I'd like to do, the whole of that path. So I might actually hit you
126,000
up.
feet of elevation as well.
126,000.
23 days, yeah.
Fucking hell. That is
No wonder
in.
I've got a knee issue, is it?
No, not really.
Sit down.
I have no sympathy for you. Right. Listen. We've been going for over an hour, so I'm going to have to wrap this up, which is sad because I've been having a nice chat with you. But
Okay.
we have okay, so we have a on the ultrasound system, we have a shared Spotify playlist. Now, I don't know if you know this because you're such a technology like Luddite, basically. There's a thing
I
called
buy
Spotify.
CDs.
Yeah, exactly. So imagine like a mix CD, but on the internet that everyone can share, right? That's Spotify. And so we have this Spotify playlist and we add songs to the playlist. Any song that people like listening to when they're running. So there's everything on there from like high-end drum and bass bangers to boy bands. It's got everything on it.
Okay.
If you had a choice of three songs to put on that playlist for running along to, what would those songs be?
I knew you. Ah, I can't. I've just got a complete memory blank. Red Hot Chili Peppers, Wet
Oh,
Sand.
really? Okay.
Yeah, it's an album track, isn't it? I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, the drum and bass band. This is what I listen to mostly this summer, running around Wales.
What
Then
on
I'm
your
going to
walk?
horrify them. Hey,
What on
wait,
your
what are they called?
Walkman?
No, I've got a proper, my mate lent, I've got a proper Bluetooth thing. I've got proper set up by people. People are ace, aren't they? Loads of people looked after me. Like proper wireless headphones onto my phone. Oh, what are they called? The drum and bass band. They're Sub Focus.
Sub Focus. We haven't got any Sub Focus. Which Sub Focus track?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that.
Bouncy Up and Down this song. Let's just call it the
It is
Bouncy Up
quite
and Down
bad.
this song. I bet if I
Oh.
put it into my Spotify, it'll come up. I bet it's a famous one.
Hang on, I'll have a look because I've still got it on
Tidal
my phone from when I went.
Wave. Desire. Off the Ground.
Desire,
Desire.
that's it.
Right. Okay. So we've got that one.
Yeah.
Any more for any more?
Yeah, do you want to hear the last one that I listened to loads running around
Yeah,
Wales?
go on.
Kylie Minogue. Yeah. Variety is the spice of life.
It.
Yeah, I
No.
listened to Kylie Greatest Hits. I downloaded it.
Stop it. I
What's
hate
the
Kylie
problem?
Minogue. I
Yeah,
just
so
think
Kate gave me a hard time about it.
so overrated. She's so overrated. Oh,
Take that back
Christ.
right
What Kylie Minogue
now.
song was your favorite Kylie Minogue song?
Oh, I don't know what it's called. One of the album tracks. You can choose whatever you want. Locomotion.
I'll choose nothing. I'll choose whatever I want. I'll choose nothing. I'll tell you what, I'll put Kids on, the one she did with Robbie Williams, because that's quite good.
No, that isn't good.
It is quite good. Right. Alan, you've been an absolute pleasure, treasure, and I've loved having a chat with you. Thank you very much. Before we go, have you got any messages for the listeners where you're like, no, I've had enough now? And is there any, can you give us a little quick follow me here? This is where my races are thing.
Yeah, I can do that. So
Go
I
on.
am Running Monk Shropshire on Instagram. I am also Running Monk Trail Events, which is me and my girlfriend Katie. That's Instagram as well. There is also a Facebook page, Running Monk Trail Events. You can check that out, see what we're doing. And then there's a website, www. I can't do the W,
You're
there's three
such
W.
rubbish.
RunningMonkTrailEvents.com. Check it out. But the website link is on our Instagram and Facebook. As you can probably tell, Katie handles all that side of it, really. I just design routes that make you all wish you hadn't signed up for it. They're all really tough and
They
they're
are
great.
tough.
The
They
routes
are
are
tough,
great.
but they are really, really nice. And like anyone thinking about doing their first ultra or even just going and do their first trail run, go and have a look at Running Trail Events because they're so lovely. They really are lovely humans. Thank you so much, Alan. This has been great. Good luck with the running. Have you got any more big adventures for next year? Or are you just like, no, I'm just going to get my knee better?
I've got to get, I'm doing the arc in January is the next one, so I just need to get fit for that.
Oh yeah, we're going on a little arc recce trip together, aren't we? Let's go have a nice time at the arc. We love that.
Got to get fit first.
I know. So have
I,
I
at the
actually.
minute, I can go uphill, but not downhill, which is inconvenient.
That's going to be a
There's quite a
problem.
few of them.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem from the start. Right, I love you. Thank you so much for doing this. I'll speak to you
Okay.
soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Bailey and Harding Ultrasound System sponsored by Innovate. We would absolutely love it if you could just take 1 minute to visit the BritishPodcastAwards.com and vote for us in the Listener's Choice Award because you're the listeners and we know that this is the choice that you want to make. It's the only choice, it's the best choice. Why not make it? Follow us on Instagram, it's Ultrasound System Pod. And on Facebook, we have a social group as well, so you can meet up with people in real life. We love you, we love everything about you. Keep your informations, your remembrances, your correspondences all coming in on the usual places. You can DM us, you can voice note us, you can do whatever you want. Email us if you want to. Send us a letter, why not? We love you. Please go and vote for us in the British Podcast Awards. Please, I'm begging you. Please. Thank you. Bye bye.